doesn't stop just at the 100, 200 and 400. We have amazing girls in the 800 metres. It's carrying the whole way through, and I think that's something that's really important to note.
For the best Olympics coverage, subscribe to the OTB Highlights podcast feed on the OTB Sports app now.
The Olympics show on OTB Sports with Indeed, proud partner of Team Ireland.
And this is our Olympics, OTB Sports Olympic show. We'll be live every evening from 5pm for the next 3 weeks across all of our social channels. And we'll bring you the biggest stories of the day, and we'll also take a look ahead at what's to come. It'll all be brought to you in association with Indeed, who are proud to support Team Ireland at the Tokyo 2020 Olympic Games. Indeed believes the world works better when people are given every opportunity to unleash their true talents. Hashtag talent unleashed. They've even given us a very special desk as well, which makes me think that I'm Ronan Collins during Barcelona 92 at Montrose. He even shaved his tash off during that when they won a gold medal. So that might await my beard should we have an especially good Olympic Games over the course of the next 2 to 3 weeks. They got underway today, of course, T-minus 2 days. With the women's football four group matches across two groups getting underway today. But Colm Dennehy, the athletics journalist, joins us on the line from Tokyo to look ahead at what's in store for Ireland in particular at these games. And, you know, it is the largest Irish squad that we've ever sent to an Olympic Games, 116 athletes, I think, in total, Colm. And there's plenty to look forward to from the athletics point onwards. I mean, that's a very promising looking team. It looks like it's a team not necessarily for this Games, but there's also an eye on 3 years ahead and maybe the Worlds to come after that.
Yeah, it's a team that's massively strong. Like you said, 116 athletes, and there's going to be a lot of medals, I think, from this overall team. I think we'll probably be looking at about 5 medals. I don't think any of them are going to come from athletics. I think my own focus would be athletics, I suppose, and yeah, just look at that for a moment. I suppose I'd be thinking Thomas Barr, it's the kind of old reliables, our European medalists of the past, Thomas Barr, Kieran McGeehan, Mark English. I think Thomas Barr can probably get into a final top 8 maybe in the 400 meter hurdles, but he's really up against it. There are 3 guys. There's a Brazilian guy, a Norwegian guy, an American guy who are just a class apart at the moment. So it's going to be really hard for him to get near the medals. Kieran McGeehan, I think, is capable of making a final. It's a 12-woman final in the 1500. I think she has the talents to get into that. She did it at world level, which is exact same standard, finished 10th. I think she could finish in the top 8 or top 10. And then Mark English, there's only 8 people get into the men's 800-meter final, but I think he's definitely got the goods to get into a semi-final with the Irish record he ran earlier this month, but it'd be very tough to get into a final. But he's classy enough and he's smart enough that he could do it. And then I suppose on the athletics front, besides that, our best chance for medal probably overall will be Brendan Boyce, who was 6th in the 50 kilometres at the World Championships in Doha. And even though the race walks aren't quite, because of the grueling conditions that were in Doha, the IOC got a bit scared and they moved the race walks and marathons 830 kilometres north of Tokyo up to Sapporo, where it's usually about 3 or 4 degrees cooler. It's still going to be pretty oppressive. It's still going to be in the mid to high 20s and humidity, so that will turn into a slog. And if it turns into a slog, there's no better man than Brendan Boyce, because he loves it tough. So he could well come through from maybe a top 5, top 6 kind of place again. And if you're in that region, you're sniffing the medals.
Yeah, he would have learned a lot as well, I guess, from his last experience too. Like, I was there in Rio. People that don't think watching the 20K or now it's 50K walk in the Olympics or in a major championships on TV don't necessarily get a sense of what these guys and girls go through during the race. It is the most grueling race, and it's the most difficult to watch when you see some of the physical reactions, let's just say, from some of the athletes who are involved.
I know exactly what you're talking about. There's all sorts of things coming out of athletes in the last 10K of the 50K, and it's not a pretty sight when you're watching it and able to smell everything and see everything on the day. But it's an event for, I suppose, crazy men as well as tough men and stuff. And but it's actually disappearing from the Olympic program. This will be its last appearance in the Olympic program. They tried to balance the genders and introduce a 50K for women, but at world level, it never really took off. So because there was still that gender imbalance, the 50K ended up being cut. And they're now going to introduce a 35K, I think it is, team race for 2024 in Paris. So it'd be a great way for Brendan Boyce to sign out off his career if he can get up there in the kind of top 5, top 6, top 8, or whatever it be again at this. But yeah, it could be a long road to Paris, and you know, the future is never promised.
Yeah, in terms of Thomas Barr, 5 years ago, I think he exceeded even his own expectations, and I don't think going into it we were going to be talking about him in terms of meddling. He came damn close to doing it in Rio 5 years ago. It seems in the intermittent time, there's a combination of age has a little bit caught up with him, that the field has gotten away from him in terms of potential medalists a little bit. How's his own form been coming into these games?
It's been good. That's been the kind of ironic thing. I know he'd probably be raging if you said it, if he heard that thing about his age, like he's whatever, 28.
I say this as 39-year-old, you know what I mean? I've got no hope.
But yeah, he's but that's the thing. He is actually in the best form he's ever been in coming into a championship. He ran 48.39 in Finland last month for the 400 hurdles. He's only run quicker than that in the European final and in the Olympic final. He's never run that quick on the circuit before. So he is going in there in great form. But the problem is, if you ran under 48 seconds, essentially, he was the only man who ran under 48 seconds and didn't get a medal in Rio. This time around, there's probably going to be, I would say, every man in the final, all eight men will be running under 48 seconds, and five of them obviously won't get medals. And I think if you are to get a medal, I think the top two will definitely be running under 47. And then the bronze might be either low 47, I'd say. So Thomas has to find over a second to try and get a medal. It looks pretty much impossible. But then again, we were sitting there going to Rio, and I remember talking to him at Dublin Airport when he was getting on the plane to Rio, and he'd been injured for 11 weeks that spring. And he basically said to me, "I'm just happy to be getting on the plane, man. I thought I wasn't even going to get there a few weeks ago." And then he turned it around the whole camp those last few weeks, put in a good few weeks training, and out of nowhere, he went from running 49, 50 seconds to running under 48 in the space of 3 weeks. So he is an athlete who thrives on adrenaline. He would love a packed stadium. It's a pity there won't be crowds on it at these games, because he would love that environment, that adrenaline. He's a, you know, he loves adrenaline sports, racing cars and all sorts of water sports and things like that. But I think he will. The key to Thomas, though, is that to get through the rounds. So he's almost most at risk in the early rounds, where he hasn't kind of got into his racecraft, his rhythm, because it's a very technical event with the specific number of strides you have to run between hurdles. So if he can get out of his heat, just blow the dust off, I guess, and get into that semi-final, and then it's going to be touch and go whether he makes a final or not. He will need the best race of his year to get into a final. But if he can get in that final, we've seen some crazy things happen many times in the 400 hurdles with athletes getting disqualified for dragging their trail leg around the outside or clobbering a hurdle. Thomas himself fell on his final race before Tokyo. So if you can get in that final, he genuinely is good enough to get on the podium if he gets a bit of luck on his way.
In terms of Ciara McGeehan, this looks like it's going to be the games for her if she's going to produce something really, really special at Olympic level.
Yeah, I think so. I think it has to be now or never in terms of the Olympics for Ciara. I mean, she raced quite sparingly this year, which I don't know if that was related to, if that was all part of the plan, or if it was related to maybe just overcooking things at the odd time in the past. Or maybe it was due to having a few niggles or setbacks early on, which I think she had kind of through the spring. She finished 10th in the world final in Doha in 2019. And I think it's going to be touch and go again. You know, you'll have two semifinals. First five will go through automatically. There'll be a few fastest losers through on time. And I think Ciara would be right on the brink of either just missing out in the final or just getting into that final. The standard at women's 1500 is absolutely crazy. You've Faith Kipyegon, probably the greatest to ever do it, is almost certainly, I'd say, going to win gold in that 1500. You've Stefan Hassan and possibly in there. She's talking about even an Olympic treble between 1500, 5000 meters and 10,000 meters, which would be just bonkers if she has the audacity to try that. And then you have a lot of depth, people like Laura Muir as well, who are, you know, running in the kind of mid 350s in and around the 355 range. So unfortunately for Ciara, the medals are not going to happen. You know, I'm sure she mightn't say that, but just looking at it with an objective eye, it's not going to happen for Ciara, a medal at this Games. But at the same time, when you're in an event and 1500 meters is one of the blue ribbon events, and you're talking about a sport that is only rivaled by soccer in terms of its global reach and possibly basketball or maybe boxing, obviously. So you're talking about, I always compare it with someone like Ciara McGeehan in an event like that to, like, if the soccer team makes the World Cup quarterfinal, we're not crying and saying they underperformed because they finished seventh or eighth and didn't make the semifinal. We're celebrating the fact that they made the top eight in a truly global sport. And I think if Ciara can get in amongst the top eight or top 10, it would be a huge, huge achievement for her.
Two of those athletes that I mentioned that are kind of, I guess this is their games before the games. One of them is Nadia Power, and obviously she's going in the 800 with Seifert Clary Butner. What are the expectations for those? Because I know in terms of indoors, they grabbed a lot of headlines earlier on this year. There were Irish records being broken. What can we expect from both of those in the 800?
I think it'd be unwise to expect too much. And I say that, you know, saying that I hope they do brilliantly and I'd love to see them do brilliantly, but I think it's very likely both of them will get knocked out in the heats. And that's just the reality, is that they were right on the fringes of qualification. Well, Nadia wasn't, she was quite comfortable. She was, but you're talking about, you know, of, I think it was 48 athletes, they were in the 40s. So once you divide that down into six heats with probably the top three to go through, you know, only the field gets cut in half before the semifinals. So you have to be in the top 24 to make the semifinals. So they're all underdogs, Shifra, Nadia and Louise Shanahan, who nailed qualification right before the deadline. They're probably all going to go out in the heats, but like at the same time, they're all young athletes, especially Nadia and Louise Shanahan. This won't be their last Olympics, and Shifra will definitely have another go again. So I think it's just about running your best race. And if that lands them in third and they sneak through to a semi-final, brilliant. That's cause for celebration. And if it's not, once they can walk away and say, I produced my best when it mattered most, maybe they finish fifth. And I think that can be all right too, because at this level, unfortunately, sometimes it's not even about your mental capacity to perform on the day. Sometimes it's just about your talent level, and you're up against the very, very best talent in the world here. You know, there is no hiding place, and that can be cruel to kind of, for Irish athletes, when at an Olympic cycle, when people haven't really been watching for 4 years, and then they tune in, they've seen them in the newspapers, and they're wondering why are they getting knocked out in the heats. It's because they're finally up against everyone in the world.
Yeah. One of the things we always get in terms of athletics, just that this is a kind of a cross-board thing going into every major tournament. You mentioned Doha a couple of times already. That was oppressive to run in certain events. You clear your quarantine in your hotel room for the next couple of days. But what kind of stadium, what kind of atmosphere is it going to be like for those athletes to run in?
I mean, it's going to be pretty ghostly. You'll have, you know, there is the classic rule of no cheering in the press box. And I think it's going to be pretty dead in that stadium. It's, I think it's a 60,000 seater stadium normally. And I don't know, is there maybe a few VIPs and things like that? But yeah, it's the way COVID cases have been going in recent days. You know, there was some hope maybe the final week for the athletics, there might be some fans let in, some students, vaccinated people, something like that. But it looks like that hope is increasingly fading. So I think empty stands feel all the worse when it's a big stadium, and this is a huge stadium, so it will be pretty deathly quiet, and it'll be very strange. But at the same time, we're whatever it is 16 months now into this, and all these athletes are very much used to running. They've, like, all the people on the Irish team, a lot of them, like Thomas Barr and Mark English, have been running at Diamond Leagues when there was no one in the stands over the past year, so they'll very much be used to it. But yeah, I mean, it'll cause some very strange scenes. And even on the plane, I heard some broadcasters were talking about a meeting they were in yesterday, and they were discussing how exactly they're going to arrange the shots, because they don't want to be, you know, the typical thing after the line would be to pan to the crowd and have some celebrations or whatever. And now they're just like, they don't want to show the stands because it's just going to look so strange. And this is essentially, it's a made for TV event, and it's a made for the athletes event. That's the reason this is going ahead. And of course, because of the huge 80% of the IOC's money comes from TV contracts for the game. So that's why it's been pushed through. And this is an Olympics that is based on advertising revenue for the big broadcasters like NBC and that around the world. And that's what it's going to be. It's going to be a TV Olympics. So it'll be interesting to see how they go. But I think, yeah, the actual experience for the athletes, it'll be strange, because a lot of them will walk out and probably say to themselves, this doesn't feel like an Olympics.
Yeah, before we move off the Olympic, or before we move off the athletics, I should say, we do have this novelty of the 4x400 mixed relay, which is something new to, I guess, the Olympic experience, and definitely one that we're kind of not really sure of what awaits Ireland, but we do have a pretty strong team. Going in for this one, the likes of Phil Healy and Sophie Becker and so on and so forth are in there. What can we expect from the 4x400?
Again, I think there's only 16 teams in it. You'll have the first three in each semi-final and then two fastest losers going through to the final. It's going to be very hard. They're going to be big underdogs, but they come in great form. Chris O'Donnell smashed his personal best there in Lucerne. He's in flying form at 45.4. National champion Keeleen Green is going from strength to strength. Sophie Becker has been absolutely flying this year, dropping down to the low 52 seconds. And she's going to be, you know, she's always dependable for a good leg, as is Phil Healy. And I think crucially for Phil Healy, she's run 51.5 this year. And Phil Healy goes into this race fresh. And a lot of times she doesn't have that luxury maybe when she's picking up a relay leg. So I think, you know, I guess they will be missing Thomas Barr, of course, who ran a brilliant leg at the World Relays. Because of the clash with his individual event, he's not available for this. So that might cost him maybe half a second or something like that, but it won't be too drastic. But again, like, if you look at it with the cold objective eye, they're probably not going to get into the final. But once they all, you know, once Phil and Sophie can run legs in and around the 51 seconds, which they're both definitely capable of, I think Sophie has actually run under 52 already. And then Chris and my name escapes me there for a moment. Chris O'Donnell and Keeleen Green, if they can run down in around the 45 seconds legs, again, that's the goal. Run your best and then you can walk away with your head held high.
You mentioned at the top of this, five medals. Where do you expect them to come?
Yeah, head on the chopping block here. I think, Richie, you're going to be shaving that beard on Wednesday, given what you said at the top of the show there.
I never agreed to this. This isn't in the contract.
Oh, sorry. No, you put it out there now. You have to follow through. Thursday morning is the one for everyone who kind of with a passing interest in the sport to tune in for sure. I think it's at around 1:30 in the morning. So essentially Wednesday night for most Irish people who are night owls. Anyway, it's probably just better off to stay up rather than getting up. But yeah, early hours of Thursday morning, Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy in the lightweight double sculls. I put it out there on Twitter a few weeks ago and I was just interested to see the response, to see how we ever had a gold medal favourite as strong as this going into the Olympics. And I'm not sure we've had, even Katie Taylor, I think in 2012, it's probably in and around the same odds. I mean, I think the bookies have them at 2-5 favourites wow. to win the gold. And that is based off one piece of form chiefly, and that's the Europeans earlier this year. All their chief rivals for gold at the Olympics are the same athletes from those Europeans, the same boats, the same crews. And I think they beat them by 2 seconds. And, you know, it was the classic O'Donovan and McCarthy stay in contention, stay in touch to the last 500 and then just blow them all away with a finish that no one else can match. And assuming, obviously, the level will go up a notch, but I think they will also have gone up a notch since then. And, you know, there is the whole pressure of the big day. Paul is well used to it. He's done it all. Fintan is a bit younger, maybe Olympic stage could get to him, but at the same time, he's won a world title with Paul O'Donovan. There really are very few chinks in the armour of these two lads. And I think if you were to pick one moment from these Olympics, one kind of, you know, the Sonia O'Sullivan moment, the Katie Taylor 2012 moment, I think it's going to be at about 1:30 in the morning on Thursday morning. I think it's going to be Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy going for gold and hopefully for all Irish eyes getting it. Beyond that, I guess, if we looked at other medals, I mean, Sunita Puspore, her final is next Friday, early in the morning. I think despite all her success, back-to-back world and European titles, there's still a little bit of a question mark about her just because she skipped the Europeans earlier this year. And even though she took big time out in her 20s, many years off the sport and came back, she is 39 years old. She turns 40 this year. And an event that's 6 or 7 minutes long, you do have to ask the question because speed and power comes into it. Endurance at that point isn't really flagging, but speed, power, strength are all things that naturally decline, obviously, as we all know. I'm advancing rapidly through my 30s myself and I can feel it, but I suppose all Irish people will be hoping that Sunita Puspore, you know, she's been so dominant, I guess, in the last few years and like those European and world titles, but she's never quite brought her best to the Olympics. She's never got into an Olympic final. And you would have to say objectively that this would be her last chance really at an Olympic medal. But I mean, it looks a brilliant chance in the singles goal. But I think she will get on the podium. What colour, I guess we don't know.
I think that
beyond that, yeah. Go ahead.
No, I think obviously enough being on the podium for her would be a remarkable mark of success for her for her work for the last 4 or 5 years in particular. But it looks like the water and the boxing area again are going to be our most dominant sports.
I think so, yeah. And then beyond that, I think the two from the boxing, I think it's going to be two women, I guess, following the footsteps of Katie Taylor. I think Kelly Harrington and Michaela Walsh. Harrington especially, I think she's ranked number one going into that, which is obviously favourable for the draw. The big danger, though, and I think the gold medal favourite, and this isn't my knowledge, I'm talking to someone who knows a lot more about boxing than me, and that's Sean McGoldrick, is Beatriz Ferreira of Brazil. She's only ranked number three, but she would be the favourite for this. Thankfully, she'll be in the opposite side of the draw to Kelly. So if Kelly gets to the final, that's where she would be meeting her for that gold or silver medal bout. And that will be on the final day of the Games as well. So it'll be a long time to wait for Kelly Harrington's, I suppose, date with destiny if we do. And then beyond that, I think Philip Doyle and Ronan Byrne as well in the double sculls, they have a big medal chance. And I think one of the Olympic predictors, I think, predicted them to win silver or bronze. And then away from, I guess, the boxing ring and away from the water, the big one is Reese McLenahan. His final, he's qualifying round on the pommel horses this Saturday morning, the early hours. And then I think it's Sunday week, August the 1st, will be his final, assuming he makes it. Obviously, the first ever World Championships medal for Ireland in gymnastics back in 2019. Everything he's been doing since says he's going in the ascendancy, but a wrist injury held him back at the Europeans earlier this year. Within 2 weeks, I remember chatting to him back in probably April or May, and he said he was back to fully 100%, and he's speaking very confidently, as he always does. And again, he's a guy who's not just going there for a medal, he's going there to win. And he says in all his interviews that he's been practicing skills that are going to be something the judges have never seen, and an exhibition and execution score that is going to win him gold. He's very, very confident, but obviously it's all about doing it on the day, but he's certainly got the talents to get on the podium, if not the very top of the podium.
One of the most confident Irish athletes I think I've ever met, and indeed a fantastic bed tester, it would seem, from social media as well. Carl Dennehy, thank you so much for joining us. We'll let you get back to bed or get up or whatever it is you're going to do for the next couple of hours in quarantine there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Cheers, Richie.
There you go, that's Carl Denny. He's joined us live from Tokyo, looking ahead to Irish involvement at Tokyo 2020, which gets underway officially on Friday, as I mentioned. Of course, the women's football got us underway today already, and of course the men's tournament is going to be something to look forward to too, with several major stars dotted throughout the squads over in Tokyo, not least of which among the South American entrants. We're looking at Brazil and Argentina in particular, and to look ahead to that Olympic soccer tournament, we're joined on the line by South American football expert, no less, Mr. Tim Vickery. Tim, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure. I got up at 5 o'clock in the morning to watch Marta and Formiga and the Brazilian women. So we're in for the marathon here.
Absolutely. Formiga gives hope to us all, doesn't she? 43 years of age now at this stage?
Yeah, she was there back in 1996. The first time that there was an Olympic tournament for women in the football. It was a fabulous story from that tournament, that the Brazilian women there were cattle class. You know, the men's team were first class, the women were cattle class. And you know those pennants that captains exchange at the start of the games? Brazil's FA had only given the team enough pennants for the group stages. But they qualified from the group stages. So in the start of their semi-final, they haven't got a pennant. So the goalkeeper, she told me this story. She was the one who spoke a little bit of English. So she taught the captain the vocabulary to apologise to the opposing captain. You know, sorry, no have. And look at them now.
Yeah, absolutely. They got off to a cracking start this morning, I have to say. 5-0 win over China to begin Group F. And it looks like, you know, the Netherlands are obviously going to be the other side to get out of that group, because they thrashed Zambia 10-3. We're looking for Brazil to get out of there and probably get through to the latter stages and be at the sharp end, focusing on medals, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially another World Cup for the women. No age restriction, nothing like that. Brazil have never done it. They got close a number of times in the first decade of this century. And in recent years, they've fallen off the pace. They got a Scandinavian coach, but it is quite an ageing side. I think seven of the starting lineup were over 30. And although they were impressive, they were also a little bit flattered by the 5-0 scoreline. Their woodwork was rattled a few times. You worry for them a little bit in the later stage of the competition, but for the time being anyway, that the dream of the gold medal is still alive.
Looking ahead to the men's tournament, because it's something that obviously Brazil are defending their title from 5 years ago in Rio. I was there that night in the Maracanã, and I don't think I've ever heard a noise like it when Neymar scored that winning penalty in the shootout against Germany. It was like they'd won the World Cup final. It almost felt like it was atonement for what had gone before 2 years previously in the World Cup. And I think a couple of the players, Neymar in particular, who were carryovers from that squad, were playing like they were trying to atone for what went on 2 years before. Looking through their squad, I mean, there are some recognisable names again this year, not least of which is the 38 years young Dani Alves, who I know we get a couple of picks each squad who have to be over 23 years of age. He sails over that boundary. It looks like all Brazilian players who are available for this definitely want to be a part of it.
Yeah, it is the big event of the Olympics here. You know, I was in the stadium as well 5 years ago. And, you know, a lot of Brazilian sports specialists at the moment when Neymar clinched that title, they were half full of joy and half full of despair, because it meant, you know, all of the other athletes in all of the other sports, they toil in a lot of anonymity for 4 years. This is their moment, and football comes along and hijacks that as well. It was, I think, in some respects, an exercise in self-deception. Brazil were taking it extremely seriously against what was really a kind of third-rate German under-23 side who took them to penalties. But it was the first time that they'd ever won Olympic gold, which was the only title that they needed to complete the collection. There was kind of a feeling back then that maybe now we've got it, we won't take it quite as seriously again. Well, that, as you've seen from the squad, is not the case. It's a tournament that people want to be involved with, the players really want to be involved with, and Brazil also see it as an interesting halfway house between under-20 football and the senior side. Daniel Alves is a very interesting example, because were it not for injury, he would have been in the Brazil team in the Copa America. He is still probably their first choice right back. They don't have a lot of strength and depth in the position. And he sees himself very much as in the frame to go to the World Cup at the end of next year. So it's an important tournament for him. They've had their full complement of three overage players. And there's some other big names on Richarlison, straight in from the Copa America squad. I'm surprised that Everton have gone along with that. Yeah. Douglas Luiz of Aston Villa, straight in from the Copa America squad. I'm surprised that Aston Villa have gone along with that. There are a number of players that they really wanted who they haven't been able to secure. Probably the biggest one is Rodrigo of Real Madrid, who they really wanted, but no way were Real Madrid going to let him go. But it's a chance for players to make a name for themselves, not only to win a medal, but also to work their way into the senior squad. The most important position, in my mind, is centre forward, because it's where, if you saw the Copa America, it's a position where I think it's with the senior team, it's still up for grabs. In the qualification tournament, which is a long way back now, as the start of last year, Matheus Cunha of Hertha Berlin was the top goal scorer. He will lead the line, and he has a real chance, if he does well, to win promotion to the senior squad.
In terms of, like you mentioned, the likes of Richarlison and Douglas Luiz there, it is a case of they're the players that are kind of on the bubble in terms of the senior squad and want to be able to prove themselves going forward to be in contention, I guess, when the next World Cup rolls around, to be the guy.
Well, Richarlison is first choice, and he's come in late because someone else dropped out. And he held his hand up and said, look, I really want to go. Let's see if Everton will let me. And I'm not sure they were entirely happy. So he's in there. Martinelli of Arsenal has a chance now to really make a name for himself because he moved abroad so early. A lot of the Brazilian public don't know him so well. So it's a big chance for him. It's a very important tournament for the Brazilian public. It's probably the, in fact, I'm told it is, it's the thing from the Olympics that gets the biggest audience.
That's incredible. André Jardine, the coach, we might not necessarily know so much about him over here. What's he been like to, as somebody who guides the team?
Well, he's relatively young. He doesn't have a great track record, and it's an opportunity for him as well. It's an opportunity for him to make a name for himself. And so far in his efforts at club football, he hasn't done particularly well. He's seen as a promise from the next generation of Brazilian coaches. So there's a lot riding on this tournament for him.
Do Argentina take this to the same extent? They've had some strong squads in the past, for sure. But looking through this one, it seems like a squad who is, again, very much in that under 23 mold, or at least was going in through the qualifiers, and they seem to be themselves building towards the future. This isn't necessarily the one that's dotted with stars looking to get on into the starting 11 for the senior team.
Yeah, perfect. Your analysis is spot on. This is basically the squad that qualified, taken more than a year and a half later, taken to the tournament. Only one overage player, Ledesma, the goalkeeper of Cádiz. They haven't gone for the big names. Only one of these players has started a match for senior level, and that was one friendly. That's Brighton's Alexis McAllister. The lumbering centre-forward Gaich came on for 2 minutes of a friendly at senior level. None of the others have played. There are one or two, especially the centre-backs. Now, the centre-back has been a problem position for Argentina, and I think despite the Copa America win, it maybe still is. There's a couple of centre-backs here, Perez and Medina, who've been in and around the senior squad. So their performances will be looked at very, very closely. But it would seem, based on selection, that Argentina have focused much more on player development, whereas Brazil really want to win the thing.
Overall, who are we looking at as being the strong contenders outside of Brazil and Argentina in this tournament?
Well, I haven't had a great look at the squads, but they seem to be stronger than I expected. I mean, back in 2008, there was a tug of war between Lionel Messi and Barcelona. Messi won the right in the end to go away and play the competition. But at that point, the clubs didn't have to release their players anymore. It was taken off the FIFA calendar. And I honestly expected the thing to kind of wither and die. But looking at the squads, they seem to be much, much stronger than I'd expected. When Argentina, for example, they end their group fixtures against Spain, who seem to be taking a very strong squad. So the overall quality is much higher than I thought it would be. Because I don't know if you agree with me, but I can't really imagine why any club, if you don't have to release your player for this, why would you bother? But a lot seem to have been seduced by the desire of the players to be part of this mega event.
There is that lure, I guess, of being an Olympian, even for some footballers who might be on, you know, stupid money a week. There is that lure of getting to say you're at an Olympic Games, you got to represent your country. And it is an avenue for some, like Brazil 5 years ago, to say we've won a major tournament. We've ticked a box that we thought we'd never get to do before.
Yeah, although the answer, I think, to the thing about being an Olympian is the fact that the football tournament is usually spread over the country, isn't it? Yeah. It's the event that's used to make a city tournament a national tournament, which means that you're not part of it, are you? You're not part of that Olympic village. So surely, from the experience of the players, that must take something away from it.
I think they'll enjoy themselves nonetheless, or at least they'll find the means to do it. I'm really looking forward to seeing how André Pierre Gignac does in the French jersey again, because it's been a while. Mm-hmm. He's been based over in Mexico, of course, over the last few years. But Tim, thank you so much for joining us. We'll look on with interest over the next couple of weeks, especially at those Brazilian and Argentinian sides. Tim Vickery there, looking ahead to the football on this, our OTB Sports Olympic Show.
The Olympic Show on OTB Sports with Indeed, proud partner of Team Ireland.